We get an update on the race for governor here in Wisconsin. There have been a lot of election-related headlines lately.
The American Civil Liberties Union just filed an emergency appeal against the state's voter ID law. A panel of three judges decided last week that the law should be implemented 50 days before the election. Meanwhile, two top Republican officials are suing election officials about the redesign of Wisconsin's ballot. And the latest Marquette Law School poll shows Governor Scott Walker and Democratic challenger Mary Burke are tied in the race for the next Wisconsin governor.
That's a lot to digest. Here to break down this news and discuss how it could affect the November election, we have Mordecai Lee. He's a professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Mordecai, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, let's start with those latest Marquette Law School polls out yesterday. Governor Walker and Democratic challenger Mary Burke, wait for it, effectively tied. We're still in this deadlock situation. No surprise there, I imagine.
Well, on the one hand, you could say this is a same old, compared to the Marquette polls of the last couple times around. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Charles Franklin, Professor Charles Franklin, said that there was a discernible increase in enthusiasm by Republicans compared to Democrats, which might be a key signal.
Right. So that's as they measure that in the poll by asking, how likely are you to vote? And that saw an uptick among Republicans this time around.
Right. And I think maybe this is an indication that we're returning to normal, not the new normal, but the old normal. Generally speaking, in Wisconsin politics, you have a higher turnout in a presidential race than you have in the midterm elections. And that the lower the turnout, the more it skews Republican, or conversely, the higher the turnout, the more it skews Democratic. So it could be that what Charles was picking up on is that if Democrats turn out at a midterm level instead of at a presidential level, then it's advantaged Republicans.
And people are looking back to the Baldwin-Thompson Senate race, where there were some early signs of higher than expected enthusiasm among Democratic voters in that race. Some people doubted it, but it seems to have panned out. Is that an encouraging sign for Republicans, discouraging sign for Democrats?
You know, Charles is a fabulous pollster. I mean, he really is the gold standard. And so I think we should take it at face value. But on the other hand, what you could say about the Baldwin-Thompson race is that there was a presidential race going on at the time. There was enthusiasm. It turned out that Wisconsin went for Obama. So you wouldn't necessarily say that the result, that just focusing on the polling about the Senate race indicated everything.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be seeing those polls, I think, every couple of weeks now between now and Election Day. So we'll have more grounds to talk about that. But in other news out this week, two Republican leaders sued election officials yesterday over changes to Wisconsin's ballot, saying, in effect, the way they're laid out helps Democrats, kind of hides Republicans. Is this a big story, do you think, or is this just some minor pre-election weirdness?
Well, after an election, when the results are close, one always looks back and says, hey, that was really important, or hey, that was really unimportant. I think in this case, Republicans are following their self-interest in the same way the Democrats would follow their self-interest in terms of not wanting voter ID to be in effect. Republicans feel that this gives an ever so slight advantage to Democrats. And therefore, the scenario they're fearing is a really close election result, so close that maybe it was determined by the redesign of the ballot. When you're in politics, the last thing you want is you wake up the morning after the election and you sort of say to yourself, darn, why didn't I do X? Mm-hmm. And so in a sense, the Republican leadership is saying, we don't want to say, darn, why didn't we do X? We want to do this preemptively.
Well, everybody, I think, thinks back to the famous butterfly ballot in the 2000 presidential elections that may have swayed a presidential election. Do you think that there's a realistic chance that this minor difference could really turn the election one way or another?
Gosh, you know, it really depends if it's a close election or not, and we really don't have the vaguest idea. For example, if we talk about voter ID, Judge Edelman, in his district-level ruling, estimated that there were 200 or even 300,000 Wisconsinites who didn't have a photo ID and didn't have the documentation to get it. Mm-hmm. Now, take, you know, let's say 200,000 people. In the last governor's election 4 years ago, about 2 million people in Wisconsin voted. So if 200,000 people are suddenly not going to vote or suddenly are going to vote, then you've got a really decisive result. On the other hand, if you have a close election, then it definitely would go to the courts, although not necessarily the way Florida went.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a lot going on here for the Government Accountability Board and local, municipal and county clerks to deal with for Election Day. A possible change in ballots, kind of in the 11th hour here, if this lawsuit is successful. And you mentioned voter ID, trying to implement that. We had Kevin Kennedy, head of the Government Accountability Board, saying, "We think we've got it under control, the voter ID part, but we're kind of scrambling. There's still a lawsuit in the works on that." Is this a recipe for trouble, do you think? Will we see some difficulties at local voting precincts?
I think this is a recipe for trouble. I think it was 2 years ago in Ohio that there was some legal fight. I can't remember if it was about the hours or something like that, but it was a legal fight where the Republican Secretary of State wanted to take it, I believe, to the U.S. Supreme Court the week before the presidential election. This is all really bad for the electorate. What elections administration officials need is certainty and stability. I think as it is, our election administration is really fragile because we have permanent personnel like a county clerk or a city clerk. But on the other hand, the real frontline administrators of an election are citizen volunteers. It's frankly amateur hour in elections. And if you think about getting new directives about how to register people or what documents they have to show, to try to train a couple thousand people who only do this twice a year, that's a real formula for disaster. So It would be better all around if we had stability and predictability.
We'll get into that a little more, but I want to go to a caller now at 800-642-1234 since we've touched on voter ID. John joins us now in Windsor. John, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Professor Lee, in the past where voter ID has been implemented in states like, for instance, Pennsylvania, there was an increase, I believe that Philadelphia had 98% the turnout in low-income communities in the last election after voter ID. Do you think that this may actually backfire on the Republicans and this may increase voter turnout with this ruling because, people really don't want to see their rights taken away? And, if they're not taken away, they ignore them. But, when they try and take away these different kinds of things, that might actually increase the turnout.
Thanks a lot, John. Mordecai, a backlash driving up turnout after voter ID.
I like John's point, and I think the correct answer to his question is flip a coin. In other words, could it happen that there'd be a backlash that he described and that, let's say, Democrats will have a higher than average turnout? Yeah, but it's equally possible that it'll be exactly the scenario that Republicans are predicting, and that's that it'll discourage turnout, especially of the more casual voter, the presidential voter.
Well, the big question here, since it's such a close race, and you and I have talked about this before, Mordecai, is what are the parties going to do? What are the candidates and the outside groups, for that matter, going to do to get their side to turn out and the other side to not to?
Rob, I think that is the central question. And in fact, one might say that the key to winning the election is going to be who has the better ground game and, conversely, who has the better voter suppression game. I'm not sure. For example, the Obama campaign did a fabulous job of grassroots organizing and getting their voters to vote 2 years ago. But on the other hand, this is a midterm election, and so Republicans have the advantage. And as the poll results showed, Republicans have the enthusiasm. So in a sense, I guess the only answer I can give you, Rob, is that's why we still hold elections, mm-hmm. because it's so unpredictable what will happen.
And you mentioned that Obama voter turnout. Has the Obama campaign and the people who worked with it, have they been sharing what they did with, say, state Democratic parties and candidates to where they can mobilize in similar ways to the presidential campaign?
I think the answer is yes. Presumably they're sharing information. They've got consultants who have done this before. But on the other hand, the learning curve by the Republicans would be just as steep. They learn from Democrats just like they learn from Republican campaign tactics. So in that respect, it's a kind of an arms race. Who's ahead of the other in terms of organizing, social media, the latest technologies? But to me, the key thing is that For somebody who only votes once every 4 years, and let's say hypothetically we're talking about an African-American voter, although that's not the typical profile of a presidential voter, but if you're an African-American and you were especially proud of President Obama and you really, really wanted to vote, but you otherwise didn't vote that often, then is that demographic less likely to vote for Mary Burke and less likely to go to the polls? In a sense, the answer to that question is going to determine who the next governor is.
We're talking to government and politics expert Mordecai Lee of UW-Milwaukee about a lot of news this week on the race for governor here in Wisconsin.
And you can join our conversation. What do you make of all this election news? How do you think things are going to play out in November? And who do you think will be the next governor of Wisconsin and why? Do you think the voter ID law will be in place at the election? And are you a little bit worried that maybe the election is going to play out in the courts? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us email to talk@wpr.org. We're picking up our discussion about the latest news in the gubernatorial election with Mordecai Lee of UW-Milwaukee.
We're taking your calls now. What is your prediction for the November election in Wisconsin? Who do you think is going to be our next governor and why? And what's the point spread going to be? Do you anticipate having to show your photo ID to vote? How do you feel about that? And do you think this race is going to end up in the courts no matter what side wins or sort of wins? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. So, Mordecai, you touched on this briefly earlier. How likely do you think this nightmare scenario is? It's a really close race, and we start seeing lawsuits over how voter ID was applied, how the ballots were served, and all this sort of thing. And it could drag out for a while.
It could drag out for a while. Hypothetically, you could have a court decide to have a new election. That's very, very rare. But ending up in court is not rare. I think some people up in the Northwest remember when Al Franken ran for U.S. Senate, and it was such a close result, and there were such contested ballots that it ended up in court. And then after some extensive court proceedings, finally the Republican withdrew and conceded the race. But he only won by, gosh, what was it, less than 100 votes. So one could imagine that. There was also another time when there was a U.S. Senate race, I think it was in New Hampshire, that was so close that they decided to have another election. But still, that's pretty, pretty rare.
I think there have been local elections in the state, smaller elections, that have ended up in a coin toss, if I'm not mistaken. That's probably not going to happen in the race for governor.
You know, I like your point, Rob, because hypothetically, could there be a tie in a race for governor? Yes, of course there could be. Is it likely, just based on the random odds of 2 million people voting, to be an exact tie? No, that's pretty unlikely. I think we're going to know who the next governor is without flipping a coin.
Do you anticipate the parties, you know, lawyering up and having observers at polling stations in districts, say, where they expect high turnout for the other side?
I'll tell you what I fear. I fear that going to vote in some of these sort of contested precincts is going to be like getting into the airport. You know, you're stopped by one person, and then you show this, and then you're stopped by another person, and then you show that, and then somebody challenges your third thing. I really think, as a person who believes in democracy, you know, with a small d, I don't think that going to vote should be as hard as getting into an airport. I think we want to encourage turnout. But unfortunately, both parties see advantages in high versus low turnout. And so it's become a partisan issue instead of a kind of a democracy issue.
Go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Steve on the line in Eau Claire. Steve, hi.
Hi. I would like some information that tells me I'm wrong. But basically, I've been mad about this voter suppression situation with voter IDs since over a year ago when I started hearing about it on a national level. And it seems to me that we missed the boat, we being the Democrats, of being the good guys, addressing the fact that nearly half the electorate wants voter IDs, or at least the Republican side is pushing for voter IDs. Even if they don't represent 50% of the people from the Republican cause that are pushing for voter IDs are challenging voter suppression. Why can't we come up with an agreement that voter IDs are necessary? We will help people that need assistance and pay for it if we need to with donations. They can go to any Democratic headquarters in any location and get the help they need to get the ID they need to vote. Hmm. By that tactic, we would be the good guys. The voter IDs would be out there, and voter suppression would not succeed. Instead, we dragged our feet and put it into the courts and are fighting to the last minute. Tell me I'm wrong about this.
Well, representing a Democratic perspective, I think you've accurately summarized it. But if we talk about the two parties seeking a kind of a public opinion advantage, I think that there's no doubt the Republicans have won the spin race, that Republicans have more sort of forcefully and adamantly talked about the need for integrity in elections, the need for every vote to be counted accurately. And I guess my own personal opinion is that Democrats have not done as good a job on the other side.
And I believe in that Marquette poll we were talking about earlier, a larger percentage of the populace supported voter ID laws than were going to vote for Republicans. So it seems like they may have won that messaging war, at least to that extent.
Right. And I think it was about 61% said they saw absolutely nothing wrong with voter ID. You know, presumably that's a kind of a middle class kind of perspective on life, whether we're talking about middle class Republicans or middle class Democrats. And I think sometimes it's hard for us to sort of put ourselves in the shoes of people who are on the margins of society. I don't know, a little old lady who lives in a rural area, has stopped driving, never needed a driver's license. The poll workers have known her for 50 years. She's confused. How does she get, a voter ID? So the bureaucracy of life, in a sense, is stacked in favor of the middle class and against the more marginalized populations, whether we're talking about age, whether we're talking about income, whatever the socioeconomic difference might be.
Steve, thanks for the call. We'll go to Craig now in Heartland. Craig, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. To answer your first question, I believe that Governor Scott Walker is going to be reelected. And my main reasoning for it is this. I believe that for the remaining 8% of Wisconsin voters that haven't made their mind up yet, I believe that they're going to vote him back in simply due to the fact that the economy is doing well, unemployment is at a very, very low rate, and typically incumbents are reelected when the economy is doing well. They're usually voted out when we're in the depths of a recession. So I think the economy itself is going to reelect Governor Walker.
Craig, thanks a lot for the call. Your thoughts on that, Mordecai?
I like that Craig talked about usually. In other words, what is the norm of Wisconsin politics or American politics? And he summarized it absolutely accurately. The question is, if Wisconsin politics have been so transformed by Act 10 that there's a new normal as opposed to the old normal. For example, right now, based on the Marquette poll, there are about 5% of the people are undecided who they're going to vote for. In Craig's scenario, they break Republican, but I think one could just as easily make an argument about a scenario that they break Democratic. I'm glad we hold elections because that will be the end of that argument.
Thanks, Craig. We'll go now to Bill in Madison. Bill, hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for the show. My comment is this, that I don't think either party really minds the voter ID law, because what both parties fear is a big turnout of the idiot vote, which could really sway elections and could sway elections in the not too far distant future.
Bill, thanks. I'm guessing the party chairs will not be expressing it in terms of an idiot vote, Mordecai, but do you think that they do live in fear of some kind of random fringe votes swaying an election?
Well, maybe that's why I got elected to the state legislature. Bill is really getting to the heart of a very serious intellectual discussion about democracy. After all, we have to remember that when America declared independence, the only people who could vote were white men who owned property. And that was almost like a ban on an idiot vote, to use his parlance, that if a white male owned property, then theoretically they were sort of viable citizens. They were participating in society fully. So, sure, the more you expand the electorate, the more you're getting to let's call them casual voters or less motivated voters. But I guess I'm old-fashioned. I'd rather expand the electorate and have more people voting and feeling that they have a stake in democracy than fewer.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. So There are two ways, I think, to look at politics in Wisconsin. It's gotten divisive. It's turning people away. It's raising cynicism. Or people are energized and excited and see important things at stake here. And that's maybe a positive, and the first view is negative. How do you weigh those two against each other, Mordecai?
Rob, can I say as my answer, yes? In other words,
waffling.
Hey, I'm a former politician. But Rob, you really did put your finger on it in the sense that both of those things that you described exist. And it's almost like which of those things is going to end up determining the result. And, you know, I don't have the vaguest idea. We're in totally uncharted territory, which I guess that's why democracy is exciting.
Mordecai, thanks as always for joining us.
You're welcome, Rob.
That was Mordecai Lee. He's professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee.